I was advised in various times of my career to not speak up about something, to not challenge, to not upset things. And I wish I hadn't followed that. In other words, I wish I had spoken up and I wish I had challenged.
Welcome to We All Make Mistakes, the podcast that finds value in what everyone else is trying to avoid, getting it wrong, or as Barack Obama once put it, screwing it up. My mission is to challenge what it means to be successful and to show you that people at the top of their game have not always made perfect choices. That's reassuring, right? My name is Ben Voyer, and I'm a professor of entrepreneurship at ESCP Business School and a behavioral scientist. My job is to understand and change people's behavior to make them better at what they do. But we're not here to talk about me, hey? In today's episode, you'll learn how important it can be to embrace your identity in the workplace. You'll also learn about the challenges of disrupting the status quo. And finally, we'll discuss why sometimes stepping in and accepting to be a role model can be life-changing for others around you. My guest today is the British businesswoman Dame Inga Beale. She was the former and first female CEO of Lloyd's of London, a three-century-old insurance market. She's known for the many challenges she's faced, modernizing an old institution, making it more digital, but also alcohol-free, and making her way there as an openly bisexual woman. Dame Inga Beale took tough decisions and is now an advocate for more inclusivity in the workplace. I'm more than delighted to welcome her today on the show.
Well, thank you. And it's great to join you today.
Thank you very much, Inga. So we're going to start understanding how you became who you are today. Can you tell us a bit about your journey? How did you end up where you are today?
Well, of course, it was a long time ago when I started my journey. So I've had a long executive role, but I want to go right back in time because it's important how it's shaped me and how some of the decisions I've made over the years, they sort of stem from those early days. And I was born in a small town in Newbury in Berkshire in the UK, which is about 90 kilometres due west from London, not a big place. And I was one of three children. But in addition to being the middle of those three children, I was born with dark brown hair and my brother and sister were born with white blonde hair. And they became very, very close friends and told me from a very young age that I was adopted because I looked different to them. And this made me much more independent, I suppose, than perhaps other children as part of a big family group might be. And I was always playing on my own, going off on long cycle rides on my own, doing things on my own from age seven, you know, six, 7 years old. But what I realized also was that it made me a bit angry because I was not part of the little team and I was excluded. You know, I was the different one. I was the odd one out. And that anger sort of stayed with me for many, 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 many years, right through into when I started work and for many years into my professional career. And that was a key aspect of how my career sort of shaped itself, because that anger rose up one day and I walked out of the office, walked out of my job after nearly, I think I'd been there about 8 years. I just walked out one day because something angered me. And I said, this is it. I've had enough. And so that was why I start with that early childhood time, because it was very important for me. And it also, that independence meant that I wasn't really afraid of going off and doing things on my own, traveling around the world on my own and doing things on my own. And I think that's been a lot of my background, my character, and that's sort of helped shape my career, where I've had perhaps the courage to do things that others might not have. I've been a bit risky, partly driven, I suppose, by that anger. It sort of made me want to do things. And that has been a big part of my whole life, but my professional career as well.
That's really interesting, because we know that independence, the state of feeling independent from others in psychology, is related to being more likely to take risks. In what respect would you say that it's shaped your desire to be inclusive as a leader and when you join Lords as well, to create an inclusive environment rather than one that excludes?
And of course, there are all sorts of studies and analysis that's happened around the better engaged your people are, the more included they feel, the more productive the company will be. You know, it's sort of win-win all round. But it wasn't that that was driving me for this really inclusive culture, particularly when I got to the last role at Lloyds. It was because I had suffered and I'd seen the consequences of being the different one, the odd one out. And it wasn't just starting at childhood. It was actually when I also started working. So this was in the 80s, early 80s. And I went straight into the world of insurance, into financial services. In the city of London, it was a very, very male-dominated environment, certainly in the role that I had, which was a very much frontline underwriting, you know, sort of negotiating, trading role. And I remember in those early 80s, we were all in a sort of large room, all open plan, because it was a trading room where brokers would walk in off the street and sit down and negotiate deals with you. And I was the only female, basically, out of 35 of us, and all the others were men. And so again, I had that feeling of just not quite belonging and thinking, oh, and you know, later on in my career, I thought that was a really bad thing because it didn't bring the best out of me as an individual. And in fact, what happened in that period of time was that I started to take on some male behaviors that weren't mine, because I wanted to be one of the gang. I didn't want to be different. And then when you start behaving differently to how you really are and you're not really your authentic self, that doesn't help anyone. You're not your best at work. You're always sort of saying things. You have to double think everything before you say it because you want to make sure sort of saying the right thing that your colleagues or your co-workers might like. It's a very complex situation.
Absolutely.
That continued, that sort of very male-dominated environment for me for many, many years. And it was the reason I actually walked out that day of my job with, you know, this sort of anger had raged in me, was partly this feeling excluded there. And then a very sexist incident happened. And there were no women to turn to. There were no senior women for me to turn to. And I just said, right, that's it. I'm going. And so having had that experience as well made me think I have just got to ensure that we are being inclusive in the workplace. We're getting the best out of our people. And also I've realized over the years that you have the most creative, innovative teams if they're made up of different types of people. So many, many aspects to this, but yeah, fundamentally it was coming from inside me. It wasn't just a big report I'd written or read from a consulting firm.
And in your career, there's a lot of research around sex stereotypes in certain professions. And so typically CEOs are stereotyped as being cold and rational and all of these. Did you ever feel a need to conform to certain stereotypes, or did you manage to be a kind of Teflon CEO woman that kind of, you know, all these critiques washes away?
Gosh, you feel a bit like a chameleon at times. And I don't know, I've never actually had a deep conversation with a man who's gone through a similar career journey. It would be interesting to do that perhaps one day. But so, and maybe they have the same experience. But for me, particularly, I felt as a woman, I had to be different things all the time to different people. And if I was in a certain situation with certain types of people, I would try and be a bit like them and be this sort of strong, you know, almost male-like creature. But then if I was in another group, I wanted my more feminine female side to come across, you know. Mm. And I found myself navigating through that. And I talk to younger women as they're starting on their career about this. And in a way, I don't think it's a good thing, because I also believe in being authentic, or as authentic as possible at work, and being your real self. But I, looking at women who haven't got to the top, or who've given up their tough financial services career, gone off to do their own, perhaps they've gone to be an entrepreneur in their own environment that they can control more, and things like that. I see this and I think, you know, the art to my success, or part of it, has been the ability to be a bit of a chameleon and adapt in certain situations. And that's the sort of role I do and play. And that's why sometimes people will say I'm very approachable and soft, and other people will say I'm really scary. and that does happen even now. Some people find me terrifying, and other people say, oh, but she's the most lovely thing in the world. And that's because I do this chameleon thing sometimes. Just that it's, you know, I struggle with it, because I also want to be really, really authentic as much as possible.
I've got some questions now. I'm interested in understanding what you would have done differently, or what you would do differently if you would be to start all over again. Is there anything that it can be a decision, or it can be a decision to join a company or not, or it can be something you did in the job that you think was a mistake, or was not something you'd do again today?
I have been a bit too impulsive at times. For many of the things I did, the decisions I made, and I reflect on, I'm very, very pleased I did them and I made the right decision. But there was one time when I was, you know, I wasn't young anymore, but I was very impulsive, and I was in a company, the CEO had changed, and the culture was going in a slightly different direction that didn't feel that was going to suit me. It felt to me it was going backwards and becoming more old-fashioned. And I'm a bit of a modernizer. I like to move ahead and do the latest things. And I was very impulsive and I chose to leave. And I just, in a way, wish I hadn't done that, because I think my career could have been very different. In other words, it sort of made me take a step back for a few years, and it was my own doing. And so that's that impulsion that at times for me has been fantastic. So walking out of that job in the late 80s, and traveling around the world, meeting that female role model in Sydney, being inspired to go back and take in the insurance sector back on, that was a really positive thing. But much later on, that, you know, that impulsive behavior was still with me, and I made, you know, I did make a couple of mistakes like that, but one in particular was leaving this company without giving it enough time, because I just saw it going in one direction. So rather than staying and trying to change it or bring it back to a more modern environment, I just chose to give up and leave. And that's a mistake.
Interesting. Generally speaking, impulsivity is a good sign. It's a capacity to make decision. Obviously, when it's too much of an urge and you can't resist it, and you know, you can't kind of cool down, then it can become a hindrance in terms of the workplace.
May I just add, actually, I think there's something also about this, and when we and how we make decisions. At that particular time, I was going through a personal crisis. My relationship was breaking up. And I think sometimes we at work, we don't want to talk about those things anyway. We don't want to let everyone know we're going through this personal crisis. But then my whole life was being questioned. And, you know, I was going through a crisis outside of work. And I think that was part of the reason why I made that impulsive decision. And I don't know how we manage this as companies, as employers, because everyone will have certain things going on in their private life that may influence the decision they make at work, which they might regret a bit later. Absolutely. So it's very, very, everything in life is complex. That was, looking back, I think that was the main reason I was too impulsive at that time.
Looking at younger generations, actually, I do research at the moment on Gen Z, who's coming of age and joining the workplace. And for them, mental health is critical, but it's also nothing taboo. So you'd have students or young workers showing at work and talking about things like breaking up with their partner or just feeling, you know, sad and depressed. And in a way that previous generation, you know, there was a kind of a no-go zone when it came to work. You know, you talk about the weather and how great or bad it was, but never really about your personal weather and how happy or sad you felt. Do you think it's a good thing?
Well, I love the fact that they're coming in with this attitude. My fear of some of this, though, is if a culture in an organization is so strong, you tend to mold to it. And when people ask about, you know, when will we get this gender parity? When will we get equality in the workplace? I sort of think, well, because they say the next generation come in with feeling completely different. Yes, they do, but often they then realize that if they want to earn some money, they want to get promotion, they perhaps have to behave in a certain way. Mm. And I saw this very, very clearly at Lloyd's. I used to meet the new people who just joined. And okay, gone are the days of punk green spiky hair, but they would come in with a sort of modern attitude, doing everything on their mobile phone, on their, you know, mobile device, living in a very digital world. You would then see them 12 months later, and they were as old as your father or your grandfather. You know, they'd been cloned because they realized, gosh, this is how you succeed here. I've got to behave just like them, or I'm going to leave. So the people who don't want to be cloned, they tend to leave. And that, therefore, getting that change to stick in an organization is very tough because you come in new with fresh ideas, but they seem to get squashed. You realize you don't necessarily have a voice, you know, that sort of thing. And therefore, these cultural changes, these changes in organizations can take such a long time. It's not just within one generation sometimes, because you've got to really knock down the traditional behaviors of the past.
And throughout your work at Lloyd's and disrupting the status quo, is there anything you'd do differently? You've talked about being impulsive and really wanting to challenge the status quo, but reflecting back on this, is there anything you thought maybe was a mistake or too fast, too many changes too fast, and so on?
Yeah, I mean, there are many things that you make mistakes over. I sort of look at myself, and we've all got different aspects. So one aspect to me is this terrible impatience I have. And sometimes I'm able to control it, but not always. And so sometimes I've not got the best out of people because I've been too impatient. And particularly if I don't think they've caught on with what I'm talking about, I can be incredibly impatient, and then makes them feel quite small, because I haven't given them enough time to get up to speed with what's going on in my head. So there's an impatience to me that I've really, really regretted, but also it hasn't always manifested itself. So hiring decisions and firing decisions about people, I have not sometimes acted fast enough. If they were the wrong person in a role, I've ummed and ahed. Because you know, firing people or making changes to someone's life, career, is a really tough thing. And sometimes I've waited way too long to take any action about someone. So this idea that sometimes I'm way too impatient with people, and then on the other hand, I haven't made decisions quick enough and I haven't acted on the people side. Decisions around other business type decisions, I've been pretty good at. And I don't feel like I haven't delayed those. Decisions around people, and you realize often you get asked, actually, as a CEO, what keeps you awake at night? You know, what's your biggest worry? To me, it was always people. Even though I was in the world of insurance, and, you know, a big natural disaster could happen, a massive earthquake, a hurricane, a typhoon, you know, could kill people and ruin people's lives. And of course, it's absolutely tragic. But I didn't worry about those things. because the company was there to do that. We had enough money to pay for these disasters. It was all about my people, because people were almost, well, they're as unpredictable, if you like, as anything else in the world. And people take up a lot of your time as a manager. And therefore, sometimes you delay making a decision about them a bit too long. And that they was, I made that mistake a few times.
And there is always a bit of what we call commitment escalation, is we tend to not like undo a previous judgment that we've made. So if we decided to hire someone, we may be more inclined to give them a second or a third shot, whereas anyone external to the initial decision would say, no, the performance is not right, or for other reasons, this person need to be let go or promoted or else. So we're always tied to our previous decisions, and that can be hard as well to part from the previous decisions that we've made.
Absolutely. And there was one mistake I made, and you did mention it in your opening about the alcohol ban. Now, this was a complacent moment in my career. Mm. We'd had success, lots of change had happened, and I was feeling pretty good, right? I was thinking, well, I really nailed this. I've got this whole organization following me. And I sort of thought, well, we can do anything now. And instead of consulting and doing what I usually did, which was being fairly inclusive, asking people's opinions, you know, molding and changing the direction of things, I made the decision with the HR director to ban alcohol drinking at lunchtime and rolled it out. And to actually my surprise, there was a complete rejection of this by the entire market and the workforce. People leaked it to the press immediately. I had more headlines about that than any other thing I did at Lloyd's, whether it was the modernization, the digitalization, the culture change. It didn't matter. It was the alcohol ban that got me more headlines right across the world. And that was something that I also regret, because I got just a little bit too complacent with what I'd succeeded with so far.
And there's another kind of related or a bit related topic that I'd like to have your opinion on, is the whole cancel culture and the idea that leaders need to take a stance. And how do you relate, or how would you have reacted still being in charge at Lloyd's when the whole idea of being accountable and having to take strong positions beyond the core business and the core activities of your company, how would you have done it, do you think?
Yeah, and I actually was not afraid of speaking my views. Obviously, when you're the CEO of an organization, you can't speak that freely, but you're certainly in a position of influence within the organization, the board, the communications department, to say, actually, I do want to talk about this. So I did openly talk about things. And I was one of the few financial services CEOs in the UK to be as vociferous as I was about Brexit, for instance, because a lot of people did not want to give any sort of political views. They were giving very neutral views. They didn't want to think that their customers might have a different view and they might put off customers and things like that. I'm afraid that I was very passionate about it. And so, I mean, I was a Remainer. And so I was very open about it, which I don't think in the long run harmed me. But I do know that some people thought I was a bit too outspoken on it. But I think it's very important. Now, it's almost as though you have to. Your employees will expect you as the CEO to have a view on things. No longer can you be silent. Yeah. And you can't have one view sort of internally and a different view externally. It doesn't work anymore. Social media, whatever, you know, the way everyone communicates, you can't have two different versions of something. So, And it actually, I think it takes courage and time, because you've also, while you're focusing very much on all your sort of internal business priorities, to then have to focus on some of those macro topics that are going on in the world and then form a view, that's also adding time. I mean, that's time consuming stuff.
Yeah, Absolutely. And how about the more societal issues? And we've talked about gender discrimination, but there are other types of discrimination in the workplace. And you came out as a bisexual woman when you were working. And I'm assuming this was inspirational for a lot of people, but not necessarily something easy when you were already in some ways being a woman in a top job is already hard enough, so that you may find it even harder to come out in that context. How did you manage to in a way find the courage to do this, and what kind of advice can you give to other people in this situation?
Yeah, and I have had various sort of chapters to my career. So in the first 10 years, I regarded myself as a heterosexual woman working in a man's world and just sort of fighting that sort of feminist side. Then I went through more than 10 years with a woman, and I thought, oh, now I'm a lesbian, but I can't be out about this because I'm working in this male-dominated environment, this financial, you know, high-pressure job. I cannot talk about this. So I was in the closet for years and years and years and years. And then I decided to come out as a lesbian when I went for a new job. And that came about because I realized that the toll, it was, you know, the pressure on you when you're in the closet about something like this, the fact actually that people don't know much about your private life means to other people you work with, you can be unapproachable, unfriendly. And it's partly because you're hiding this other stuff, but people don't know that. And so they just think you're a bit unfriendly and they don't necessarily relate to you at all. And I realized I was lying to people. And I thought, this isn't good. So I did come to a moment and saying, right, I'm coming out now. But then some years later, we were married at this time, my partner, she left me. And then I went through this next phase of after some time meeting a man and then being bisexual. Again, you weren't sort of labeled that you sort of go through life thinking you're going to get. Mm. But that's what it was. And then I started at Lloyd's and the media wanted to talk about it. And I actually said no at the time. They wanted me to be a big role model. And I actually said, no, please, I need to establish myself as a leader. Mm. I'm having the gender thing already as a challenge.
Yeah.
But then I realized that the LGBT community needed me as much as the female community to talk about it. So after a year, I then decided to be open, very open about it and put myself up and got recognized, you know, in some awards for being openly bisexual. And then I realized the positive impact that had, that role model side of it, was just vitally important. And so I've continued to talk openly about it.
Mm. And do you have any advice for younger, younger female employees or younger male employees or on how to embrace and make this part of your identity and kind of thriving for authenticity work in a workplace context?
So we still know that people who finish their studies, when they go back into a workplace, and it's a bit like this sort of, you're modeling the behaviors that you see. And if it doesn't feel like a very gay friendly place, you might well go back in the closet and not be open about your sexuality. So we know that still happens. But I would always encourage people to find a group, find allies, find somebody you can have a conversation with, because it's usually the support you feel from others, whether they are allies or whether they are part of the LGBT community, it's the support that you get from them that usually gives you the courage to be out and to be yourself. And the networks, employee resource groups, whatever people are calling it these days, I think are absolutely critical in this, because it gives you a platform to have a combined voice. You're not going to be the single voice.
Dame Ingebjelf, so inspiring. Thank you very much. To finish with, we have just a few very short questions. My first short question is, what's a mistake you keep on making but hope one day you won't?
The mistake I keep making is my impatience with people. I keep making it time and time again. I hope one day I will learn and show more patience.
If you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice the moment you had that impulsive decision to leave the big job, what would it be?
Take time to speak to others. I did have mentors. I didn't use them enough. I should have at that time. Get advice from others and listen to them.
And twisting things a bit, what's a piece of advice you've received that you wish you had not followed?
I wish I'd not followed the advice around not speaking up. I was advised in various times of my career to not speak up about something, to not challenge, to not upset things. And I wish I hadn't followed that. In other words, I wish I had spoken up and I wish I had challenged.
What mistake are you the most forgiving about others?
A mistake that they feel sorry about and they apologize for. One thing that annoys me, people can make all sorts of mistakes, but it's when they don't actually say sorry or feel bad about making it. They're the mistakes that I don't like to forgive.
Yeah. And last question, what is a mistake you regret not having made?
I think a mistake I regret not having made is at one time I should have tried to go off in a different career direction. I do not believe it would have worked, but I didn't do it. And I actually regret not trying it. So I'd been working in financial services for most of my career. I had the opportunity to take on a new role. I think it would have been a mistake to go and do something else, like go into sport or go into pharmaceutical or healthcare or something. Because I don't think I would have necessarily succeeded, but it's a regret that I didn't try it.
Absolutely. And maybe it's also about making mistakes when you're younger so that you won't repeat them. I think, Inga, thank you so much for your time. It's been invaluable. I'm sure you, like me, and very much enjoyed today's talk with Dame Inga Beale. What we've learned is the importance of creating a safe space to reflect. And I think when we talk to Dame Inga Beale, she's able to reflect years after the end of her time as CEO at Lloyds. But you may find yourself in a position where you don't have that time to reflect. Finding and creating a safe space with like-minded people is a way for you to be able to get feedback on what you're about to do, get feedback from others, and that can help you move forward in your career. The other thing that we've learned in today's discussion was the importance of standing for who you are and not always overthinking what you're doing. The more you self-handicap, the more you tell yourself that you may not succeed or that you need to be careful about this and that, the more you risk not getting your point across or not succeeding at what you want to be doing. Thanks for listening to We All Make Mistakes, the podcast that finds value in what everyone else is trying to avoid, getting it wrong, with me, Ben Voyer, a professor of entrepreneurship at ESCP Business School. Thanks to the team who worked with me on this, Emily, Lara, You Love Words, and the recording studio, Laia Boutique. If you enjoy this podcast, please hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you just can't get enough, check out Her Voice, a sister podcast from The Choice, which aims to contribute to women's visibility in their domains of expertise.